This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. 20 and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back in to the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly, and guess what? We're joined by the founder of the Die Hards here on this Friday night, Anthony Pepe, who is visiting the compound. How are you doing, Anthony?
What the heck am I doing here, man? I thought I had the night off.
Oh, I thought so, too. You just poked your head in. You felt like putting some hot takes out there. What's going on in the NFL world, in your opinion?
Well, you know what? It's just, again, it's that at the time of the year where your players are showing up to training camp and there's still some unhappy players and all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, none of this stuff matters. It matters at the first game, the first kickoff, the first punt, the first throw, the first pass, first catch, first defense. It matters the first game. All this stuff doesn't matter. I know people in Tampa Bay are disgusted. They lost their center, ACL for a few months, and all the different stuff that's happening and all the different storylines. There are a lot of storylines, don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, it's training camp. And everything will work itself out. You'll know the good teams. You'll know the bad teams. You know the projected good teams. You know the projected bad teams. Someone will surprise you. Someone won't. At the end of the day, it'll all work out in the end. Week one, it'll happen. And then come week seven, week eight, you'll kind of know what teams are what.
Yeah, and do you think the Patriots have a chance to squeak into the AFC playoff picture this year? Vegas predicts them to only win 8.5 games at their over-under.
You know, they win 10 games last year with Mac Jones, and everyone's touting Mac Jones being, you know, looking great. And Bill Belichick, what's he supposed to say about his quarterback? Oh, he looks crappy? Of course he's going to say he looks great and he's happy with him. But at the end of the day...
Did he do that with Brady, though?
You don't know. But it's a different story. And now it's post-Brady, so I feel like he has to do that. But at the end of the day, they win 10 games last year. This team is better. Mac Jones is better. He's going to be better in his sophomore year. So they should win more than 8.5 games. I can't believe that line that the Vegas, the folks in the desert have it at 8.5. I think it should be 9.5 because they won 10 last year. I think they win 10 or 11.
Do you think that's more of a product of the fact that the AFC just got improved across the board or the fact that they stayed stagnant?
I think the AFC improved across the board. And again, you look at Buffalo, they're the team to beat. But don't forget, Kansas City's still the team to beat. I know everyone wants to go Buffalo, still Kansas City. You take the show. I don't even want to be here, man.
Well, we'll be right back here on the Die Hard Show, hosted by me, Brendan Connolly. We'll be right back. Keep it here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back to the latest edition of the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly. Our next expert on the Progressive Guest Line is Adam Clancy. Adam is a host of the Boston Bruins podcast, The Causeway Kings, and he is one of the most passionate hockey guys I know, serving as a coach at Braintree High School up in this neck of the woods. Clance, welcome to the Sports Map Radio Network.
Thanks for having me, boys. I'm excited to be on.
Well, welcome in. I do want to ask you a couple of Bruins questions off the top because that is your primary sector of knowledge here. I believe you have been a big proponent of the Bruins searching outside of their market for their next coach. They answered your prayers and inked Jim Montgomery to a new deal. Did you like that move?
I did. I like it a lot. And being on, as you know, I'm a big advocate of, you know, bringing in the outside voice, you know, but the Bruins' past, you know, trail is, hey, let's bring someone in within the organization. They know the system. You know, it's just kind of status quo when you do that. But when you bring in an outside voice like a Jim Montgomery, it changed the whole demeanor of the room. You're going to get more out of the guys with a fresh voice. I love it. I think it's going to be great. And you know what? The bees are hurting with bodies right now, but I think with him at the helm, I think they're going to be in good shape till the guys are back and healthy.
After so much debate as to whether the Bees should bring in David Quinn as the next man behind the bench, he ends up in San Jose. Do you like the hire from the Sharks' perspective, since it's a different conference, different situation, not here in the market?
I do. I think, you know, David Quinn, he's, you know, being out there now in San Jose with, you know, fellow BU alum Mike Greer's new GM, I think he's going to do good things out there. I think he brings a good coaching style to, you know, a whole new organization. a whole new conference, and I think a lot of players are going to buy into it, and I think he's going to do really, really well out there.
I believe Ty Anderson put out the report that he was expected to be the next guy for the Bruins, and then the media got a hold of the story, and they kind of changed their tune. How do you think he would have ultimately fared here?
It's tough to say, man. I like David Quinn. I think he's a good coach, but, again, he's got ties to Boston, coach at BU, couple BU guys on the team, Grizzlick, McAvoy, Coyle. It's just, you know, it's just, I think it would have been a stale voice, and it would have just been the same thing that they've been dealing with the past, you know, seasons. And I think it's better off that he's out in San Jose doing his own thing and, you know, making a name for himself out there.
Yeah, I do kind of think he has a better opportunity, in my opinion, to kind of succeed, mainly because there's less pressure. It's just not as crazy of a market, and I think he can thrive in some area like that. What are your thoughts on the Patrice Bergeron situation? Will that get resolved anytime soon?
It's tough to say, because I feel like as each day goes by, it's less and less promising that he's going to come back, to be honest with you. I don't know what the issue is. I don't know if it's a contract negotiation from a money standpoint or anything like that. But, again, if he would have come back, I think he'd be great. He's a great leader. He's still got a lot of gas, you know, in the tank. But I feel like if each day passes that he's not signed, it's not a good sign for Bruins and the Bruins fans.
Yeah, that's not really great. Do you think Krejci's tied to him, though, however? Do you think it's a domino situation?
I do, yes. I do. Not as much as more of a tie with Pastrnak, because I feel like Krejci coming back was a huge part on Pastrnak's doing, you know, over in the playing together over in Europe and, you know, being the Czechs and stuff like that. But I'm sure Bergeron coming back has a part in Krejci coming back as well, from a few standpoints. Simply just coming back to be a Bruin for another year, as well as, okay, if Bergeron's going to sign for X amount of dollars, what's Krejci going to be able to sign for? You know what I mean? So I feel like Krejci's holding out and to see what Bergeron's doing, because then he can name his price on, hey, you want me back, this is what you have to pay me.
Do you think it's an issue of being paid, or is it something else? Maybe health?
Oh, I'm sure health is a factor. I mean, as everyone knows, David Krejci, when he's healthy, is an extremely effective player on the ice, but he has a track record of not being healthy, playing full seasons and being hurt and all that, which, you know, if you're not a consistent player, yes, that's going to drop your value down a lot too. Same thing with Bergeron. I mean, the guy's been a warrior his whole career. He's been through hell and back. I mean, how many years ago was it in the playoffs where he played with broken ribs, a punctured lung, and all that?
Oh, yeah.
That takes wear and tear on the body. He's not going to have the money value that he would have if he was, you know, healthy and can still play 82 full games and all that.
Hmm. What did you think about the John Klingberg news and his decision to sign with the Anaheim Ducks on a one-year deal after that massive contract came to an end?
I just, you know what's funny, Beacon, is I just saw that earlier today, and I was baffled. I'm like, 1 year for $7 million? Like, that's a hell of a trial period cost in my eyes.
Should the Bees have been in on him?
I feel like they should have. He's a right shot defenseman. He's an elite defensive player. Great offensive ability. And someone like McAvoy, who, again, is, in my eyes, is the top 10 defenseman in the league, who's going to be out for the next 6 months, you should have brought someone in like a Klingberg to fill that role until McAvoy's back and healthy. You know, because, I mean, McAvoy, I had the exact same shoulder surgery McAvoy had. And I'm being told by my own doctor, you can't play men's league hockey for at least a year after the surgery. You know, and they're expecting him to come back in 6 months. You know, that 6 months, is it back to skating and skating and practicing, or back playing competitively at the NHL level? You know, that could be another 4 or 5 months after being cleared to skate.
Well, the Mega Millions jackpot is being drawn tonight. Who knows if somebody will win? But the Bruins kind of took a lottery pick of their own here by bringing in Pavel Zacha here. They traded Haula for his services. It was like taking a bet on a young lottery ticket. But he still remains unsigned, at least officially. What do you think the reason for that is?
In my eyes, I think it's a term thing and a money thing right now. I did read something earlier, I forget who put it out, that they were coming close to a multi-year extension on him. But I'll be honest with you, I love the Zaka pickup, or the Zaka trade, I would say. I'm a little concerned that no contract has been signed yet. I know they were in arbitration. I haven't seen any results of that. But then again, like I said, I did hear that he was – there were talks of, you know, in play of a multi-year extension, but I haven't heard any details on it. So it's kind of like the Bergeron situation. Nothing's been done yet. What does that mean? Every day that passes is less and less convincing that something is going to happen. Because, I mean, technically, he's still a UFA and can be picked up by any other team.
For sure. What has been your favorite NHL signing around the rest of the league this summer to this point, however?
Oh, Johnny Gaudreau to Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
John, hey, you know what? Beacon, it's funny. I go back and forth between the Johnny Gaudreau in Columbus and the Matthew Tkachuk in Florida. I think both of them are unbelievable signings for both organizations. I mean, they both just came off career seasons. Gaudreau ended his season with 115 points. He had 40 goals and 75 assists. Tkachuk, I think, ended like 104 points. And with Columbus signing Gaudreau to a long-year term, that just makes that organization more of a hotbed for hockey, as well as, you know, in the future free agents. Oh, wow, they got guys like Johnny Gaudreau, Patrick Laine. I mean, hell, I would not be surprised if Patrick Laine has 45 to 55 goals this season getting passes from Johnny Gaudreau, you know? Yeah, but overall, that's my favorite signing.
What do you think about the Patrick Kane rumors that have been coming out recently?
Hey, I wouldn't mind giving the 88 to him instead of Pasta. it's interesting to see what's going to happen with him and Taves, to be honest with you. I mean, those two have been icons in that organization since they were drafted and became NHL players. It's very interesting to see what's going to happen. I don't know. I've heard rumors of him going to the Rangers with Panarin. You know, they're buddies over there, so I don't know. It's one of those things that I feel like something will happen, but it will be like with team out of the blue, almost like with the Gaudreau situation.
Right.
You know, no one ever expected Johnny Gaudreau to sign in Columbus.
Right. I don't think anyone did. Anyway, Clance, I wanted to thank you again for joining us here on the Diehards tonight. Where can listeners find your work and find you on social media?
I am on, obviously, WMEX podcast with the Causeway Kings. My Twitter handle is CausewayClancy4. Instagram is CausewayKings33 as well as AFClancy4. Or you can hit me up on email at clancy4.ac@gmail.com. Love to talk hockey. Would love to get on again with you guys. This is great.
Hey, would love to talk with you again soon, Clancy. I'm sure I'll be joining you guys on the Causeway Kings really soon. Thanks again for joining us here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon, Clance. In the meantime, keep it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Up next, we're going to talk NFL with Russell Baxter of FanSided. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And we're back here on the Diehard Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. NFL teams reported for training camp this past week, so we'd be remiss if we didn't talk Patriots. We felt it would be best to bring in an NFL expert for this discussion. So up next, we're going to be joined by football historian Russell Baxter. Baxter covers the NFL for FanSided and is a contributor on numerous football networks. Russell, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
I'm doing well on this Friday night. Yourself?
Well, I am a few days away from packing the family truckster and heading to Canton, Ohio for the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Well, that should be a great day. What are your predictions for what's going to take place out there this year? Any plans in store for you?
Well, I've been attending the ceremonies pretty much regularly since 1989. You know, it's been an ever-changing process out there. You know, when I first used to go out, the ceremony was on Saturday morning. The Hall of Fame game was on Saturday afternoon. The ceremony was at the steps of the hall. Now, of course, things have changed dramatically since then. Thanks to Jim Kelly back in 2002, who I believe said he was going to bring 3,000 people with him and did. They moved the ceremony to the stadium, and it worked out so well that they have the ceremony there now. And, of course, now the stadium's been expanded. The press box's been expanded. There's a Hall of Fame village. It's come a long way in what I would say a relatively short time.
Certainly going to be a great couple of days for you, I'm sure. Let's begin with New England while we're on the topic of the Pats, however. Who has to really emerge for them this season besides Mac Jones? Do you think one of their new additions, maybe a draft pick, has to pop? Or do you think somebody else like Matthew Judon has to be that guy?
Well, I think the least of their defensive problems is rushing the passer. I think more of their defensive problems is stopping the run. And we saw that kind of fade and really be a problem for them down the stretch. We saw what Jonathan Taylor did to him, one, I think it was a Saturday night game. We saw what the Bills did to them overall, running the football on them in the playoff game. And in this league, even though there's still really an emphasis on quarterback play, if you can't stop the run, you really can't stop anything defensively. I mean, teams are able to dictate tempo, so on. I mean, listen, I thought Mac Jones had a solid rookie season. I thought they did a good job going out and getting him and surrounding him with weapons and so on. Their offensive line play was solid, but they just seemed to wear out down the stretch. And even though they got back playoffs, to bow out the way they did was really kind of, I want to say, un-Belichick-like. But again, they've got to be a tougher defensive team. If the offense is going to listen, if you don't have the football, I don't care who you have on offense. And that was a problem for them late in the season.
Oh, for sure. Thoughts on Belichick sticking with Matt Patricia and Joe Judge with the offensive play calling duties?
Obviously it's not an area where they've, really made their bones and so on. But who knows what the real process honestly is going to be? You know, one thing we know about Bill Belichick is we don't know what Bill Belichick is actually doing and so on. And, he's always been very, very secretive in his approach, and it has served him well. I think a lot of people, after Tom Brady left and the team had the losing record, thought they were on the downswing, and they turned around and wound up making the playoffs. And again, they faded late, but the bottom line is they were able to rebound without Brady and some of the other people they lost and get on a different path. So I'll be curious how this all unfolds. For years we really didn't know. I mean, obviously Josh McDaniels had a big influence on the offense, but, we saw Bill O'Brien there years ago as well. The one thing about the Patriots is their unpredictability and their ability to adjust as well. So I'll be curious how to see this really unfolds in terms of the play calling.
Well, it looks like they've also given a bigger role to Evan Rothstein as well, former Detroit Lions coach. We'll see how that pans out. We'll see who really takes over the coaching duties. I feel like it's a coach-by-committee approach going into the season, however. Many Vegas folks gave the Pats an over-under of 8.5 wins entering this year, down from 10 last year. Do you believe that this is just because the rest of the AFC has improved so greatly, or do you think they've really taken a step back?
No, I think that's maybe a little bit of both. I don't know if they've necessarily taken a step back. Again, they started out slow. They caught fire in the middle of the season, and then they faded. But listen, the Jets are obviously an improved team with what Joe Douglas has done there, GM-wise, some of the people they brought in. Miami swung one of the bigger trades of the offseason in getting Tyreek Hill. They have a new coach. So I think it's not so much, they've slipped, is that the AFC East, who, obviously they dominated for basically two decades, obviously caught up with them. I mean, Buffalo has now won the division the last 2 years. We saw them, for almost 20 years not get swept by a division rival. Now that's happened. And now they've lost a playoff game to a division rival. So a lot of those things that you took for granted for two decades have kind of gone by the wayside.
What were your thoughts on the recent Jimmy G news? Recently, his agents were given permission to search for a trade partner, despite him continuing to have some success out there. Where does Garoppolo end up this offseason, and does this eventually come back to bite San Francisco?
Well, they gave up a lot, obviously, to move up to get Trey Lance. To have him stay not Trey. I mean, to have Jimmy Garoppolo stay another year would, you know, deter the process that they're trying to build in San Francisco. Now, listen, they got to the NFC title game last year, which probably a little bit of a surprise. They had bounced back the year before. They were a last place team. I don't know if it necessarily comes back to bite San Francisco. I think personally, this is a very, very important year, less for Jimmy Garoppolo and more for Kyle Shanahan. You know, I know injuries have played a part in this, but Kyle Shanahan's tenure with the Niners has included two playoff runs and little other success. Again, Jimmy Garoppolo's health plays a factor there, but they've had other injuries as well. The, you know, the year that who was it, Solomon Thomas and Nick Bosa went down in week two of the season. So the Kyle Shanahan regime era, however you want to call it, has not been, I would say, an over-success. Again, there's the Super Bowl appearance. Last year they got it to the NFC Championship game. But it's been more erratic than it has been consistent. So, you know, I don't know if it necessarily comes back and bites them. They've put an awful lot of faith in Trey Lance, who they moved up to get with the third overall pick. He's not going to sit forever. He started two games last year because Garoppolo was hurt. I think it's obviously, dare I say, it's probably more of a big year for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch than it is necessarily Trey Lance.
Your thoughts on the Kyler Murray situation. First, the contract. Was it an overpay?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the market if you want to keep your quarterback these days. You know, looking at what has gone on around the rest of the league with Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson and so on. And, you know, it's funny if you compare it to the Deshaun Watson situation. I don't want to say it would be an underpay. There are some people who think that Deshaun Watson got overpaid. We didn't even see him play football last year, and we're still waiting to find out when he's going to play football this year. It's kind of odd to put this into proper perspective because we have seen not only Kyler Murray, but the Cardinals in general get off to these great starts and then fade. And it's happened every year that Cliff Kingsbury has been the head coach. Coincidentally. Now, of course, Kyler Murray's been his quarterback. But last year, remember, they were the last team to lose a game. They were 7-0. And by the end of the year, they were losing to the Lions, and they got embarrassed in the playoffs by the Rams. The year before that, you know, remember they beat the Bills on a Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were sitting 6-3 and lost five of their last seven games. That's not all on Kyler Murray. So, again, these contracts, as we see them, I don't know if it's necessarily an overpay. He was the first overall pick in the draft in 2019. And again, you look at the market with quarterback. And here's the other thing to keep in mind with a lot of these quarterbacks' contracts is, you know this as well as I do. When salary cap problems pop up, who is the first person they're going to turn to renegotiate their deal and have them, you know, restructure the deal? It's going to be the quarterback. Okay, we see that time and time again, regardless of who it is. So I think Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury have a lot to prove this year because they have both, so far, have not been able to go the distance. Again, the Cardinals made the playoffs last year, first time since 2015. But to be 7-0 and not win the division was kind of disappointing overall.
I am curious to see how he reacts to the fact that they added a studying clause to his contract and then immediately subtracted it out of nowhere, but we'll see how that pans out. Russell, I wanted to thank you again for joining us here on the Diehards. Where can listeners find your work?
If you follow me on Twitter at BaxFootballGuru, everything I say, everything I write, whether you like it or not, you're going to get it from me.
Well, Russell, thanks again for joining us last minute here. Appreciate it as always. Look forward to talking to you next time.
All right. Have a good week next week. We are 6-8.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back to another edition of the Diehard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. No Anthony Pepe tonight, although he did briefly join us for a quick segment. I'm Brandon Connolly filling in for him from the compound here in the Boston area. Our next panelist on the Progressive Guest Line has been making waves in the Boston area for his hot takes on all things sports. He is a play-by-play analyst for ESPN and Learfield Sports and covers Brown football for the most part. But you can also catch him right here on the Sports Map Radio Network weekly, as well as WMFO on his own radio show. We are joined by our friend Shukri Wrights. Once again, Shukri, are you there?
Hey, good evening, Brendan. It's good to talk to you again on this wild Friday night, the last Friday of July. It's hard to believe, isn't it, huh?
It's unbelievable. It's flown by. I feel like the high school season was just ending a few weeks ago, and boom, in a blink, we're already heading into August. But we are also now 3 days away from the MLB trade deadline. The Red Sox have continued to spiral, yet there is a large crowd that avidly believes this team should still be buyers. Do you agree with that sentiment?
I don't think they should be buyers still. I still maintain that belief from last week Friday. But I would say that my opinion has become a bit more, like, refined, so to speak. Whereas it isn't so much as the poking fun or the roasting, but at the nitty-gritty of the matter, I think that the Red Sox find themselves in a place where, talent-wise, I just don't think that they're good enough. Although they're right there, maybe four games out of the third and last wild card in the American League. I just think that if you're the Red Sox at this point in time, I just think that realistically your best chance is not to be on like buyers. I think at this point, there are too many holes on this roster that I just think that they're not good enough to contend for this October, and there's no one to blame but high and blue. And even if you were going to make trades, you have to be willing to trade some of your top prospects. And you don't have like a whole lot of top prospects right now in the minor league, so that's kind of like where I'm at with the Red Sox.
At this moment, the Sox have indicated that they plan to dip their toes in both markets, actually. Chaim Bloom essentially told reporters that if a good deal is presented to them, he might take it, regardless of the direction it brings the team. What are some likely moves that you see on their radar initially?
One of them is maybe adding a bullpen arm, but I think that they actually need to like add a bullpen arm if they're going to make any sort of run in the final 2 months of the season, because let's be honest, this bullpen for the Boston Red Sox has been absolutely atrocious the last year and a half. And the problem goes back to Chaim Bloom. He has not done much of anything to really address it. So I think that if you're the Boston Red Sox, I do think that if you're going to be like buyers, you got to improve the bullpen. Start there. And then on top of that, maybe add a starting pitcher in the rotation that can give you innings and length. Because even if the postseason were to start tomorrow, you have like a lot of question marks that need to be answered for the Boston Red Sox in terms of the pitching. So that's something that I think that needs to be addressed at the trade deadline and in the very near future.
Bloom also said that the Sox have no intentions of trading Bogarts for prospects. Essentially, it just sounds like the front office wants to go on one more playoff run with their homegrown star. But is that a mistake, given the fact that the Sox have not indicated that they're close on an extension and the fact that they're in last place in the AL East at the moment?
That's a great question, because I think that would be a colossal mistake if they don't move, only because what if they don't come to an agreement? What happens then? So you lose them from nothing. And I think that's a very real possibility, but there's also the possibility that they could, reach an agreement. And I'm gonna leave that door open as well. But the reality is that they are playing with hot fire if they honestly think that if they don't come to an agreement and letting him walk in free agency for nothing and get nothing in return, the ire of the fan base is gonna turn to a Chaim Bloom. Like, again, this team at the end of July, as we all know, they're truly just not good enough to contend in October. I just think it would be a mistake if they don't make a move to trade Xander Bogaerts now. And if he chooses to walk in free agency, if the Red Sox do not offer him a serious contract, because some team out there is going to give him the money. That's for sure. Because he's too good of an offensive shortstop to not get paid $27, $30 million a year.
Reports came out that the Red Sox offered Rafael Devers half the money he was hoping to command when they made their latest contract pitch. How crucial is it that Boston finds a way to smooth that situation out immediately?
They're going to have to, because that in itself is absolutely comical, and it tells me why I think that, in all seriousness, that in itself should worry you even more, because this is the same thing that the Red Sox did with Mookie Betts. Literally the very same thing. They lowballed him at first. They offered him more money, but it was never in the neighborhood of what Mookie Betts was looking for. And Rafael Devers is literally about to fall into that same pattern of behavior in which that he's going to get lowballed. And I don't want to fault him if he says a year from now, you know what, I'm out, because this is ridiculous.
Recently, the New York Yankees, your team, decided to trade for former Red Sox legend Andrew Benintendi. Did you like the price the Bronx Bombers paid to acquire his services?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy that's a contact hitter, and if anything else, like, this is the perfect type of hitter to add to the Yankee lineup, a contact hitter who can spray the ball in all different parts of the field. And I think that for the New York Yankees right now, given where they are and some of the holes that they had, they were going to have to part with some of their prospects, and I have absolutely no problem with the deal at all. I think it's a slam dunk deal, especially for a guy that's hitting 320 this year with Kansas City prior to coming to the Yankees, and this is a move that I think is going to only make this lineup even better.
Yeah, it was weird just to see how that whole Benintendi situation panned out here in Boston, because it started off very well. Then the pandemic year happened, and he just never found a groove. And you could tell it was getting to him. He ends up getting shipped off to Kansas City for Franchy Cordero, and feels like he's found himself again. He's coming back to life in the MLB. And meanwhile, the Red Sox have a gaping hole at first base that does not appear to be going anywhere anytime soon. And I don't think Franchy Cordero is that solution.
No, he's not. And it's abundantly clear. I mean, I don't know how much clearer you possibly can get, which is why if you're a Red Sox fan, how can you not be fed up with the situation? I'm sure a lot of Red Sox fans are. And which is why, like I said, going back to my earlier point, they have too many holes in this roster to fill. Like, they need a competent first base, and they don't have that right now. And that's just the harsh reality of this team. And I'd wonder if Chaim Bloom is truly seriously going to tool this roster to make a postseason push, he is going to have to make some shrewd moves that's going to actually help this team now. Not moves that's going to, in which that, oh, well, here's a makeshift option, and let's just hope for the best. That's just not going to cut it.
Well, the Yankees are arguably the best team in the MLB right now. They're far and away up there with Houston and L.A. But who's another trade target you'd like to see them acquire at the deadline in the next couple of days?
I was talking about it last night on the Diehards on SportsMap Radio Network. I was talking about, you know, Luis Casiwe is exactly the sort of pitcher the Yankees need. Precisely. Another true ace, another guy who could be a difference maker, especially for this Yankee rotation that suddenly has question marks going into the final 2 months of the regular season. So I think that if you are the Yankees, you got to go after Luis Castillo. And this is a guy that, yeah, he is going to be expensive in terms of prospects, but this is the year that you got to make the move with your Brian Cashman.
Let's switch to NFL training camp briefly and some of the offseason moves that have taken place. What were your thoughts on the Patriots deciding to stick with Matt Patricia and Joe Judge as their offensive play callers, with Evan Rothstein as an understudy of sorts? Do you think this could ultimately pay off after hearing some of Mac Jones' comments this week?
Like, I don't even think it was so much as for the Patriots to stick with them. Rather, it was more of a point of bringing them back, that given that their contracts with their former employers, the Detroit Lions and the New York Giants, respectively, like, they're still being paid by other teams. But the problem that I have is, and only time will tell, the problem that I have is that when you don't have a sense of continuity as to who's calling the offensive plays, you're going to run into problems. And there's too many examples of guys who are second-year quarterbacks across the NFL who have gone on to become elite starters in this league. Like, they have that continuity. And I just wonder, with the Patriots, how long can this type of move or decision-making last and work, especially for a quarterback that's, let's face it, he's under a lot of pressure, come the start of the season for a team that does not have a whole lot of guarantees, to say the least.
Your thoughts on the Kyler Murray's current situation? We just spoke with Russell Baxter of FanSided, and he felt the contract might be viewed as an average one for a quarterback as time goes on. However, there has been some recent drama that has surfaced due to a clause in that said contract. What were your thoughts on the news that broke over the last couple of days?
I thought it was comical, really. I mean, because one, the fact that you had to put a clause in there for him to use 4 hours of study hall time is absolutely just shocking. You don't see that with anybody else, any other quarterback in the NFL. You don't see that with Mahomes. You didn't see that with Russell Wilson. You just wonder if there is a lot more going on with the Arizona Cardinals down than we realize, because I thought that was just why? Was that truly necessary, or was this to create some sort of a headline and for Kyler Murray to even have to address it in front of the media? I thought that was actually pretty telling. I wonder what kind of precedent that set in terms of the culture with the Arizona Cardinals moving forward.
Hey, yeah, what was the video game that he was caught playing too much? Was it Call of Duty?
I think it was Call of Duty, something like that. Either that, I forgot what this is. Other addicting video game that, Fortnite.
I was going to say, it's got to be either Warzone or Fortnite. Both of those video games, I'm not going to lie. Even normal people can get hooked on those. I'm not going to lie to you. Wouldn't be surprised if Kyler Murray wanted to burn some stress off by playing some Warzone. Definitely recommended. If you're an adult, of course. Another question. Is this finally Buffalo's year? Most experts are picking Josh Allen and his group to go all the way, and it would be the first trip to a Super Bowl since the 90s for the Bills when they dropped 4 straight. Any shot they finally get over the hump this year?
Absolutely. And I was talking about it last night with Bobby Cavici, and one thing that I talked about the most is that this is a team that has been building towards this for 3 years now. They've got it all together now. Last year, despite the crushing loss in Kansas City in the divisional round, they took strides. They're there. They got a legitimate defense. They got a top-5 passing attack in the NFL with Josh Allen and Sean McDermott, who I think they are quickly becoming one of the best quarterback head coach duos in the league. I mean, say what you will about Sean McDermott and some of his deficiencies. But the truth is, they're there to win now. Their future has arrived, and there's no question in my mind that I think that the Buffalo Bills are going to be the team to beat in the AFC this year, even ahead of Kansas City. And I thought that Kansas City lost too many weapons over the last couple of years alone, and which is why I think that this year that they're going to take a step back in Kansas City. But I definitely think this is Buffalo's time to make a run to go to the Super Bowl and possibly win it all.
Well, Shukri, my last question for you, sticking with the Kansas City losing pieces. One of those pieces was Tyreek Hill, who goes to the Miami Dolphins. Do the Dolphins surpass the Patriots this year in the AFC East?
They're close, but they're not there. The reason why I would say that they're not there yet is because I just think that if you are the Miami Dolphins, your biggest question mark is Tua Tagovailoa. That's your biggest question. What are you going to get from Tua? And how effective is he going to be, especially as you move closer, as you get closer to the regular season? I just think that if you are Miami, you have to wonder how effective is he going to be. Does Tyreek Hill put him over the top in terms of finally becoming a quarterback that the Miami had hoped that he would become when he was drafted in 2020? So, but they're close, but I'm not sure if they're there yet. It depends on the play of Tua Tagovailoa.
Well, Shukri, we are up against it. Where can listeners find your work and find you on social media as well?
Yes, you can follow me at Shukri Rice, at Shukriwrights. You can also follow me on TikTok as well. You can catch me in Boston on WMFO as well as weekly on the Sports Map Radio Network as well.
He's Shukri Rice, one of Boston's up-and-coming media stars here in the sports world. Shukri, we'll talk to you next week here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you then.
Talk to you then, Shukri. Keep it right here on the Diehards as we wrap up the night. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back into another edition of the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly. Just wrapping up here on a great night, we spoke with a series of experts here on the Diehards. We had Josue Pavone of CLNS Media join us to talk Celtics. His co-worker, Evan Marinofsky, also came in from CLNS Media to talk Bruins, as did Adam Clancy from the Causeway Kings. We also had Jack Supino from WMEX come on and join us for the Beantown Rundown. And a big thanks also goes out to Russell Baxter from Fansided for joining us to talk NFL. Again, my hot take of the night. Red Sox have to be sellers at this deadline, or at least pick a route. Either go in and sell your prospect, sell your pieces off to get a star. Sell your prospects like Tristan Casas, Marcelo Mayer, Brian Bayo to Washington. Bring in a guy like Juan Soto. Extend Bogarts. Go all in and try to make a run at a title if you want to go that route. I just wouldn't try to play both sides of the aisle. Just feels like it could lead to some holes for the Red Sox going forward, and it could set them back a little bit. Well, that just about wraps it up here on the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I want to thank Austin Rodriguez down in Houston for producing the show tonight. Great job as always, Austin.
Thank you, Brendan.
And in the meantime, we'll be right back here next week on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly. Stay tuned as Anthony Pepe will be making his return then. Talk to you then.